We're out here at the Hall of Fame Fan Fest with one of the Hall of Famers in attendance today, Steelers linebacker Jack Ham joining us. And Jack, what's an event like this mean to you? You've been through, you know, all the ceremonies and everything like that. To bring this on the road, how different is it and what's it mean to you?
Well, I think that's key. I think, number one, to get together all the guys. We have over 100 guys here from the Hall of Fame. We normally have to make the pilgrimage over there to Canton. So the idea of bringing it somewhere else and also the idea of getting together these guys, especially last night at the dinner, you know, guys I haven't seen for a while. I haven't seen Terry Bradshaw for quite a while, and we sat down, and along with Mel Blunt, we were laughing for about a half hour out there. So it's, and then I got spent time with Lawrence Taylor and Dan Marino last night, and probably one too many wines for those two guys, but it was just a lot of fun, and just a different venue like this, I think it's a great idea.
As you look back now on your career in the National Football League and getting to catch up with other guys who have reached the ultimate honor of being Hall of Famers as well, what stands out to you as you look back on it as maybe one, two, or three of your biggest or greatest memories?
Well, I think one of the greatest memories I have when we finally, as a team, we won the Super Bowl down in New Orleans, our first Super Bowl. And Art Rooney, the chief, as he was known back then, the owner of the team, Pittsburgh always had a reputation of being the losing team, play hard, but they'd lose games all the time. To finally win the championship and see him get Art Rooney get the Lombardi Trophy from Pete Rozelle, the commissioner at that time, I think to a man, I think that's probably one of the highlights of my career.
Today, a lot of players really don't, I don't want to say respect their owner, but don't deal with an owner as much as back when you played. He was kind of like a guy you could go to at any time, right? Oh, I mean, you could talk to him whenever you wanted to, and there was a different bond between players and owners back then than now, right?
Well, I think those are special owners back then. You talk to Maras in New York, McCloskey's in Chicago, and the Rooney's, started the league back then, didn't know where it was going to go. TV comes along in the late 50s, I guess, whatever, to really put it on the map. But you're right about the fact he was a bigger than life kind of owner for it. And I know Terry had a great relationship. He would always bring I don't think the chief smoked cigars, but he had them in his mouth all the time, and he would always bring cigars down to Terry, who did smoke cigars at that time. And yeah, you're right. It was a different bond. Today, it's corporations own teams anymore right now. But those were special times. I don't think we'll have them again.
What was the locker room dynamic like back then with so many future Hall of Famers? I don't know if when you were playing you understood how many potential Hall of Famers were in that locker room, but the egos, we always hear about it, it's hard to mesh egos in that in a locker room. Was it tough for you guys back then, or was the chemistry there?
Well, I think the chemistry was there, and I think probably big reason for this Chuck Knoll. I mean, yeah, you're right about the fact you can have great players, but to play well together, egos have to be put aside. That's why guys like Terry, our first couple of Super Bowls, Terry could throw the football. I think there's no question about that. But we had a really good running game, good defense. We won games 21-10. When we needed him to throw the ball, he did, with Swan and Stallworth and all those guys. And so Terry didn't care about numbers and stats. He just cared about winning football games. And, he's probably one of the biggest stars on our team. And Joe Green on the other side of the ball, the same thing. So you're right. Egos were set aside. When guys can just one common goal to win championships, and we all kind of bought into that, but it started with Chuck Knoll.
What about the Steel Curtain defense? What made it so special? Obviously, a lot of Hall of Famers, that helps. But what made that defense so special?
I think that besides having the guys who are great players, pretty smart guys out there. I mean, I won't say we were all members of Mensa, but we understood what teams were trying to do. We could play it on the physical side, like the Oakland Raiders would play, or Houston Oilers at that time. And then on the finesse side, the way the Cowboys would play, we could play it on the defensive side of the ball any way you wanted to play it. But we had some guys, unsung heroes out there too. Guys like Mike Wagner, who's a smart guy in that secondary. He was kind of the glue to all those guys back there. And we had guys that, you're gonna during the course of a game, you got to make adjustments. And sometimes you got to make them on the field without coaches. And we had some guys on that defensive side of the ball who were pretty smart.
You're one of the greatest linebackers to play the game. What makes a good linebacker then and now?
Well, I think, number one, you got to work at your craft. I mean, especially when you get to the pro level. I mean, all of a sudden, your physical ability, which is so much better in college, all of a sudden it's all even off. So you have to work at your craft and watching tape and diagnosing plays and all the things that give you a little bit of an edge like that. And like I said, we had guys out there who understood that and how to play the game that way.
for you, you were known as a great cover linebacker. How do you think the game has changed from when you played to today? And it seems like linebackers have a tougher time covering guys today.
Well, it is a substitution game now. I mean, the guys like a Sproles out of New Orleans or a Ray Rice out of Baltimore, guys who are a mismatch coming off the edge for a linebacker, and they're too physical for a safety when they substitute out. And those kind of guys always give people problems out there. And in my era, they were getting to that part where the back out of the backfield became a priority in the passing game, and they've taken it to a whole new level now with, you know, 3, 4, 5 wide receivers at times. So you want to spread yourself out. You can't hide out there. If you're not good enough to cover on a man-to-man situation, they will find you.
Here at the IX Center, you're just outside of Cleveland, Ohio. What are your memories of the games with the Cleveland Browns over the years?
Well, I got number one, not being in Cleveland for quite a while. Downtown area has really changed quite a bit. I've got to give Cleveland and everybody around here a lot of credit. But I remember this town as Cleveland Stadium, and that dugout going into in a pregame warm-up my rookie year, someone throwing a liquor bottle at me as I'm going in. And my highlights of Cleveland are not exactly, you know, wonderful memories, I guess, but great battles out here with Brian Sipe and all the guys here. And it just, it was a tough battle here to try to win here in Cleveland. And there'd always be 80,000 or whatever it was at Cleveland Stadium for the Pittsburgh game. And those were battles that I'll always remember.
When you look back on all the teams that you played on, what was the best team?
You know, probably the best team was the team that we didn't go to the Super Bowl. We'd won two in a row, and we ended up having Franco and Rocky hurt for our championship game against the Raiders. Raiders were a good football team. If we, during that era, if we didn't, you know, we didn't go to the Super Bowl, they were, and if we beat them, we were going. And they were a good football team. We might have lost anyways, but we didn't have Rocky and Franco for that game. And but we, at that time, our defense was at its peak. Our offense is really peaking as well. And that was probably our best football team.
And this is something I'm very curious about with individuals as well as organizations. Can one play change the direction of a franchise? And we think with the Steelers of the immaculate reception. Can that really one play make that big of a difference in turning around maybe an individual's career, but more importantly, an organization's future?
Well, I don't think one play can do that. There's no question. People realize that the next week we lost to the Miami Dolphins after that the immaculate reception, and the following year we got knocked out of the playoffs. 74, we come back, and now we start to put it together. It gives you confidence when you win a game, playoff game, in a pressure situation like that. But no, I think what happened in 1974, we get on our first four draft picks, we get Swan, we get Lambert, we get Mike Webster and John Stallworth, and that put us over the top.
No doubt. Great teams. Jack, we appreciate the time. Thanks for making it for us, and best of luck in the future.
All right. Thank you very much.